Hi, this is Odin One Eye from the View from Valhalla, and you are listening to the short stories of Dan Dan the Art Man, Episode 6. The story you are about to hear is not science fiction or fantasy, like you're used to hearing from Dan, but there's still a lot of action and drama. You can find my reviews for all sorts of podcast novels at my website, viewfromvalhalla.com. I've currently reviewed 50 audiobooks, and the number keeps growing. So if you've been thinking about finding a podcast novel to listen to, but don't know where to start, check out my site. I'll try to steer you in the right direction. By the way, Dan, when's that novel of yours going to hit the feed? Maybe then I can review it. Okay, let's get to that story.
A Second Chance, written and read by Dan Absalonson. Part 1. He thought he had shot them all. Through his scope, he scanned a horizon of crumbled buildings. All seemed quiet. Then, from behind what was left of a house, he found another soldier wandering through the rubble. He steadied his aim, then fired.
"Yeah, another headshot,"
Jerry said through pierced lips, holding a cigarette which bobbed between them. It was always like this the weekend of payday. His dad brought home a bunch of smokes, then went to the bar until it closed, or he got kicked out. Jerry loved it when he was gone. It was the only time he stayed home anymore. His dad's company had become less desirable ever since Mom had died. There were complications with the pregnancy. Jerry was supposed to have a little brother, but now all he had was a dad whose only attention came when he was drunk. Jerry was getting pretty tired of wearing sleeves to hide the bruises. Over the winter, it was no problem, but now summer was approaching. The sound of an old Chevy truck pulling into the driveway out front stole away his peace. What the? Dad should still be at the bar. He got up, put out his cigarette, and ran to his bedroom to get dressed. He threw on an old pair of jeans and a paint shirt, his customary lawn mowing apparel, and ran to the back door. Before he could reach the doorknob, his dad came through the front.
"Boy?"
"Oh, hey, Dad. I was just gonna go out back and start mowing the..."
"I come home and what do I get? A walk through tall, mangy grass. I gave you one thing to do. What have you been doing all day? Playing them video games?"
His dad took a few sniffs of the clouded air.
"And smoking my cigarettes again. I think you need to learn a lesson, boy."
"No, Dad. I was just on my way out to mow the lawn." He turned the door handle, but it wouldn't twist. Why was the back door always locked from the inside? His dad had the only key. No one else could get in through the back unless they jumped the fence, which was impossible. It was built of solid wood and stood at 8 feet over their dry, yellowed lawn. Jerry swore under his breath, knowing what was about to happen. How could his dad have gotten so drunk he was kicked out of a bar that he was a regular at before noon even hit? His dad closed the front door behind him and stumbled into the living room.
"I gave you one thing to do, boy, but I guess you need some more learning. When are you going to start listening to what I say?"
This wasn't fair. His dad never came home before dark on a Saturday. He was going to mow the lawn, but why do it first thing in the morning when you knew your dad would be out till dark? If their living room wasn't so tiny, he could probably get around his dad. Normally, Jerry cowered, begging to be left alone. Now his dad had gone too far, invading Jerry's only time to himself at home. He was sick of finding another place to be during the week until he knew his dad would be asleep. He was sick of wearing sleeves to hide the bruises. He was sick of explaining away the ones on his face. So before his dad could cross the room and get a hold of him, he lifted the coffee table up. Old magazines, crushed beer cans, and unwashed dishes crashed to the floor, followed by the huge overflowing ashtray. A gray cloud rose above the mess as the ashes spilled onto the stained, speckled carpet.
What are you doing, boy? You must really want some learning. You're too weak to take a swing at me with that thing, so what are you planning to do?
Jerry didn't have plans to take a swing at his dad with the coffee table, and for now, the amusement of it kept his dad at a safe distance. With shaking arms, he raised it above his head, turning away from his father, and smashed it down onto the doorknob. It broke off and hit the ground with a bounce. Jerry kicked the door open, leaving the table to slow his father down as he sprinted for the back fence. Jerry had screwed an old piece of wood onto it a few feet off the ground for an occasion just like this. He sprinted for it, hearing his dad fall over the coffee table behind him. As he came near, he leapt up, planted one foot on the piece of wood, and pushed up, grabbing the top of the fence, pulling himself over as the momentum lifted him away from the ground. Even with the push, it took everything he had in him to get his waist up to the top. He swung one leg over, then the other, until he was hanging from the other side. He dropped down and fell onto his back. He laid there laughing for a while as he heard his father kicking the fence and swearing on the other side. Then he got up and sat with his back against the fence. As he panted, he pulled a crumpled cigarette and a lighter from his right pocket and lit up. His dad started listing off what he would do to him to make him learn his place. The more Jerry heard, the stronger his resolve became that it was time. He had been trying, really trying, to stick it out until he finished his senior year. He'd been told that a high school diploma was better than a GED, but this was the last straw. He refused to put up with his dad any longer. Later today, when his dad was passed out lying on the couch, he would steal his truck and get away from this place. He got tired of listening to his old man, and his smoke was out, so he got up and started walking to the nearest gas station. By the time Jerry made it back home, the energy drink he bought was down to one last swig. Hoisting the big black can, he finished it off, a little extra jolt of energy to help him move fast once inside. He listened at the door, and hearing nothing, moved in. His dad was sprawled out on the couch, his buzzsaw snore assuring Jerry he had a little time. He went into his room and filled a duffel bag until it was like an Oreo, double stuffed. He couldn't get them to zip, so he put all the cigarette packs he could find and an extra pair of shoes on top, then lifted them under his armpits. As he waddled towards the front door, it looked like he was trying to do the motions for "I'm a little teapot, short and stout," but with two handles and no spout. It would have made more sense to take one bag at a time, but he wanted to get out of there. He made it outside and threw the bag into the bed of the truck. As he reached for the driver's side door, he heard the one to the house swing open. He looked over and met his old man's startled gaze. He jumped inside and slammed the door, locking it with his left hand as he used his right to start the engine. While he popped it into reverse, his dad came stumbling out, pumping his fists to accentuate his screams. As he chased after the truck, dust rose with his anger, clouding his vision and dissipating slowly after its cause had gone. Jerry was trying to be cool, but he felt like he was going to cry. That was the last thing he wanted to do. His father deserved no tears. At a stoplight, he opened the glove box to see if his old man left something in there which could help him take the edge off. A little liquid courage might do the trick. Sure enough, there was a small silver flask lying right next to a handgun. He never knew his dad had a gun. What would he need one for? He picked it up and checked to see if it was loaded. It was. He made sure the safety was on and put it back. He grabbed the flask and closed up the glove box. When the light turned green, he continued driving until he saw a small side road, then he pulled off. He drove a bit until he was out of view from any buildings or traffic. He unscrewed the cap and took a whiff. A strong whiskey smell floated up into his nostrils. He took a quick sip and forced it down before his taste buds could revolt. Then he waited for his gut to calm down and threw back a few more. He didn't feel much better, but he also didn't think his stomach could take another drop, so he screwed the cap back on and slid it next to the gun inside the glove box. He turned the big old wheel, flipped a U-turn, and then got back onto the main road. Just before he passed a sign telling him to get into the right lane to merge onto the freeway, a minivan cut him off, forcing him to slam onto his brakes. As if that wasn't enough, Jerry saw the driver lift their hands a few times to flip him off, like it was his fault. It was in this moment that something inside of Jerry finally broke. It had taken everything inside of him over a long period of time to not retaliate back at his dad, to not get him back while he was asleep, or even kill him once he had passed out. He knew he never could have done it. There were times when he had planned on putting his old man out of commission, but every time, he just couldn't do it. No matter how many times he had beaten Jerry, he was still his father. It was the act of finally leaving all that behind him which released something in the back of his mind. Someone had to pay for the way his dad had treated him. The effects of the booze could only do so much to push back Jerry's feelings of hatred and injustice for what the last few years of his life had become. Now this person had cut him off and then flipped him off several times. Without thinking, he opened the glove box, grabbed the gun, and then stepped on the gas. He rolled down the passenger side window and accelerated next to the minivan. Before he could even get a clear look at the driver, he unloaded the clip. The driver fell onto the steering wheel, and the van took a sharp turn to the right, slamming into the guardrail, which sent the van into a spiral over and over again across the on-ramp. Jerry put it all in his rearview mirror and just kept driving. The last thing Tom Orchard was expecting to get on his 30th birthday was a call at his desk from a policeman. A half hour after sitting down from a nice, long lunch break, his phone rang.
Hello?
The news was so dreadful and unexpected that it took a while for Tom to realize this was no joke. This was real. The officer told him that his pregnant wife had been assaulted by gunfire. The shooting resulted in her losing control of the vehicle and it tumbling end over end along the freeway on-ramp. She and their son had been killed. It was all he could do to hold it together until the call was over and he could get outside. Why had he forgotten his cell phone at home again? It was torturous not being able to just get up and walk. To walk away from all of his coworkers before he absolutely lost it in front of everyone. Cubicle walls were very thin. As soon as he passed through the doorway into the brisk blue afternoon air, tears began to flow and undefinable sounds tumbled out of his mouth in quick bursts. How could this be true? Things like this just didn't happen. All of his big birthday lunch soon found its way onto the rough, gray sidewalk, and he lurched down as it flew out in wet, hot chunks. He made sure it had all come out, and then walked off the sidewalk into the bushes to sit with his back against the building's chilled exterior wall. It took him a while to get the control to get back up and walk. He went around to the side entrance and then down some stairs to a bathroom that nobody used. He cleaned the dried vomit from his mouth and swished water around to get the taste out. It didn't help much. He searched in his pocket on the way out of the bathroom and found a few quarters. On his way to the stairs, he popped them into a glowing machine and watched his selection fall, like all his dreams, to a metal coffin below. He reached in and grabbed the cold can, opening it on his way back up. He could barely taste it as he walked to his car. He couldn't feel anything. Everything was just numb. As he drove off, he told himself to remember to call his boss and let him know why he had left early. The guy was kind of a schmuck, but even he would understand. He went straight home because the officer had told him that he didn't need to come in right away to identify the bodies. Any time this evening would be fine. He needed to get to a phone where he could break the news to his parents and in-laws, without all of his co-workers in earshot. He drove home with a wild anxiety, blowing through a couple red lights and turning corners at speeds which made his tires squeal. A part of him wanted to join his family. Maybe he could get in an accident too. Then he wouldn't have to try and go through this life without them. It sounded like a better option, but he made it home with no incident. As soon as he had his cell phone, however, he jumped back in the car and started driving. He couldn't stand to stay there. Everything around him reminded him of his family. His family, who was dead. He drove towards his parents' house, giving them a call on the way to let them know he was going to drop by. 10 minutes later, he was knocking on their door.
"Tom, what's wrong, honey?"
His mom could tell right away. At the sound of this, his father came in from the family room. Tom tried to stop the tears, but they came anew. "Mom? Dad? They're dead."
"Who's dead?"
his father asked.
"Kathy, Ronnie, and the baby. They're all dead."
Soon they were all hugging with tomato red eyes and wet cheeks. No one talked for a while. They just stood there, shuddering into each other's shoulders. His dad was the first to speak.
"Have you told her folks yet, son?"
"No, I haven't had it in me to call them yet, but I need to."
"Would you like me to do it?"
No. Thank you, but I should be the one to do it."
"All right. Why don't you go into the family room while your mother and I fix some dinner? We'll give you some privacy."
"Okay, Dad. Thanks."
"You bet, son. Anything you need."
His parents walked to the other side of the house towards the kitchen, holding hands. He couldn't remember the last time he saw them hold hands like that. He dug into his pocket and pulled out his cell phone. Then he walked over and slumped down onto the couch, bringing his hand up to his forehead, as he waited for the rings to stop and force him to talk. Mrs. Kennison answered the phone. Her husband was probably still at the office. She too could tell right away by his voice that something was wrong. And like him, she never expected this news. "Barbara, Kathy, Ronnie, and the baby were in an accident."
"Oh my gosh, are they okay? Tell me they're all right."
"I'm so sorry, Barbara, but they're not all right. They were killed."
Her voice broke into uncontrollable sobs. She waited with the phone pulled back from her ear a bit, until she was able to shift into rapid breaths and sniffs. "Is Ted still at the office?"
"Mm-hmm."
"Would you like me to call him?"
I would appreciate that."
"Okay. I promise I'll call him right away after we hang up."
Okay, dear.
Goodbye, Barbara.
Goodbye.
He held down another number on his phone, and the speed dial brought up his father-in-law.
Hello?
Hi, Ted.
Tom, what's wrong? Something happened?
It's Kathy, and our baby, and Ronnie. They were in an accident today. And Tom, they all died.
Oh no. Have you told Barbara yet?
I just got off the phone with her. I told her that I would call you. She didn't seem able to.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Oh my gosh.
Tom sounded incredibly disturbed, but he was a strong man. He knew he had to be strong for his wife, who was now home alone with the news that her daughter and grandchildren were dead.
Okay, I'm gonna go home now and make sure she's all right. Oh my gosh. You hang in there, Tom. We're going to get through this. Thank you for calling me. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right. They hung up, and they cried. Ted began to sob silently as he got up and put on his jacket to go. Tom cried for a few minutes, and then got himself together and went to join his parents in the kitchen. His mom had made a simple dinner of sandwiches and had three plates laid out for them on the counter. I'm sorry, Mom. I just can't eat right now.
That's all right, dear. I'll put it in a baggie for you so you can have it when you're hungry.
No, that's okay, Mom. I just
let her work, son. You know, this is helping her deal with this right now.
Tom nodded. Thanks, Mom. That would be great. Dad, would you come with me? I have to go identify their bodies.
Sure thing.
Thanks, Dad. I don't think I can do it alone. Maybe you can drive, too.
Yeah, no problem. Can you pack my sandwich as well, sweetie?
She nodded and continued to work, pulling out a couple of brown paper bags. Soon each man had a tear-stained brown paper bag in hand. They gave Tom's mom lingering hugs, and then headed out the door to the car. It was the longest drive of Tom's life, even longer than the drives over the weekends to visit his wife back when they had been engaged. They lived 5 hours away from each other, but he would make the trek every time his Friday workday was over. People used to remark on how hard that must have been to make such a long drive, but he would tell them, "Actually, it's the waiting in town to finish my work week so I can get in the car and drive that's the hard part." He had loved her so much. Jerry drove until the sun disappeared far down the road into the mountains. He took an exit into a town whose population barely took up 4 digits. After driving through the downtown area, which took just over a minute, he took a side road and ended up pulling over into a wheat field. He drove in far enough so that no one would be able to see him from the road. Then he hopped out and rummaged through the duffel bag until he found a couple of sweatshirts. Then he got back into the truck. He put one of them on and then used the other as a pillow as he stretched out across the bench seat. With everything that had happened today, dead silence was the last thing he could handle. He needed something to distract his racing thoughts, even for just a little while, so he could fall asleep. He put the key in the ignition and turned it halfway. He reached over and pressed in the knob, turning on the radio. Even though his dad was a drunk, he still listened to the AM news. As a reporter's voice faded into the speakers, he reached up to change it to FM when he heard
the game 57-43. In local news, a pregnant mother, her baby, and 2-year-old child were killed today by a shooter while trying to merge onto the freeway. Please keep a lookout for an old green Chevy truck. A Mrs. Perkins saw it all happen.
I didn't catch the license plate. That was the last thing on my mind. As soon as I heard a gun go off in front of me, I slammed on my brakes. I saw the minivan in front of me careen into a guardrail, and then flip over several times across the on-ramp. That's when I saw the truck beyond it, accelerating away from the scene. I remember seeing Chevy across the tailgate, and that it was green. I don't think I'll ever forget that.
The sound of Jerry's raised voice echoed through the small cab of the truck as he swore, hitting the radio button to turn it off. He had been under the impression that he got away clean. He sat up and hit the dashboard. He reached into the glove box, pulled out the flask, and took a long pull. Then he put it back and started to laugh. No sleep for the wicked, I guess. He started the truck and put it in reverse until the road came into view. He drove back to the freeway and then hit the first rest area he could find. He would need their free coffee. Hey guys, this is Dan Absalonson, the writer of this story. Thank you guys so much for listening. I wanted to give a shout out to the awesome gentleman who did the bumper for this episode, Odin One Eye, over at viewfromvalhalla.com. And check the show notes for a link, because he is one of the few great champions of audiobooks. It's really awesome what he does, reviewing audiobooks over at his site. He does a great job. You should really check it out. To me, it's even really interesting to see what other people have thought of books that I've listened to. So, see what he has to say, and then it's fun to leave comments. And a lot of times, a little conversation about the book will start in the comments section on his website. So, it's just getting more of a buzz about audiobooks. One more way for people to find out about them, and it's just an encouragement for people to go listen to them. So I just want to say, as a podcast writer, someday a podcast novelist, it's got a couple novels, but they really need some work before I can podcast them. I just want to say to you, Odin One Eye, thank you so much. And to all of you guys listening right now, why don't you go over to Odin One Eye's site, View from Valhalla, check it out, and leave a comment. Tell them thanks for reviewing audiobooks. So, as you can tell, that is not a complete story. This short story is about twice as long as any other one I've written. Usually they're just over 5,000 words, which make just under a half hour of actual story time. But in this case, I think it's going to be 2 half-hour episodes. So, you're getting this one, and as soon as I can put it out, you will get the next one. Next month, I'm really hoping to put out another short story, but I know I'm going to be hard-pressed because I'm going to do NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month. This will be my second year. I won last year. I got 50,000 words on the 28th of November with 2 days to spare. I never thought I would get 50,000 in a month, but I'm going to try for it again. Interestingly, it's going to be a lot harder this time because we've cut back a little bit, and I don't have internet access on my BlackBerry anymore. The reason that that will make it harder to write as many words is that a lot of my writing was actually done with an app where I could talk into my phone as I drove to work, and it would transpose it right onto my screen as text. So it was like I had a dictator sitting next to me on the way to work. That really helped me get my word count up there. So now I think I'm going to record my voice, and then I'll have to transcribe it myself. So that will add to the challenge for my NaNoWriMo this year. But I'm going to write a sequel to the very first book I ever wrote. It's going to be really fun. It's going to have to do with time travel and some magic. It's a fantasy story. So hopefully someday I'll be podcasting it. But in the meantime, thank you so much for listening. In less than a month, I will be posting part 2 to this story. I really hope you enjoyed it, and I'll talk to you later. Music used was my old band, Dying to Live. I played bass and did some vocals. Sound effects used are from
freesound.org.
This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 U.S. license.
The Dead Robot Society podcast and MWS Media LLC are proud to announce Explorers Beyond the Horizon, a short story anthology to be published in 2011. The stories in Explorers will feature characters forever changed by the discoveries beyond their land or world. Fiction submissions are now open for Explorers. The submission period will end at 11:59 p.m. Central Standard Time, December 31st, 2010. This is a paying market with royalty sharing. Please go to www.deadrobotsociety.com/anthology for complete submission guidelines and answers to frequently asked questions. Good luck to everyone.
Their friendships endured for 20 years and more. Wherever life took them, they carried each other in their hearts and their memories, and in the shadows of their dreams. If you ask, they'll say their story began in those hazy days and cloudy nights in the middle of the 80s, when childhood at last began to blend into tentative, stumbling adulthood. Hazy Days and Cloudy Nights is the new ongoing serial fiction webzine from author Matthew Wayne Selznick. Subscribe and you'll have access to a new chapter every 2 weeks, plus special members-only content, community, and benefits. Sign up for a free trial or subscribe for a year of content for less than the price of a paperback book. Visit hazydaysandcloudynights.com today and let the story take you back.